Welcome to the Digiday Podcast. I'm Kaylee Barber, media editor at Digiday.
And I'm Kamika McCoy, senior marketing reporter here at Digiday.
Your guest this week is Chad Wilson, who's Olipop's head of marketing. And I have to admit, I was first introduced to them like a couple weeks ago. I don't know if I was like living under a rock. At least that's how my friends kind of made me feel. But my friend Nina wanted to bring Olipop to our Super Bowl party as kind of like the non-alcoholic option. Which personally, I'm going to partake in the alcoholic option if it's available. But I also like appreciated, like, it's soda, but like not soda, right? Like there's like this thing, like that's how they're kind of like posing themselves. But anyway, I just learned what they are.
That is, drinks like Olipop are like my dad's jam. Okay, first of all, this man used to be, like, we'd go on road trips. This man would down a Mountain Dew and a bag of peanut M&Ms in one go.
Sounds delicious.
Count my blessing every day that he's still here because that is an insane combination.
That is a lot of sugar.
He has since switched to a healthier lifestyle, drinking, Olipop and drinks like that. I was really excited to be able to have the opportunity to talk to Chad about kind of their brand and their recent growth, especially because the health and wellness, I don't want to call it a community. The idea of health and wellness is like a really big thing right now. I'd almost go to call it like an oversaturated space, but like most advertisers, they've got a lot riding on TikTok. It's early days for TikTok in terms of like direct response, TikTok Shop. It's a very good brand awareness channel, but they are starting to test some of those more, you know, click-through sales type deals, like some other advertisers. Obviously, we had a conversation about their third-party cookie and how retail media is becoming more important in light of Google's crumbling cookie and things like that. So I won't give away the whole juicy scoop, but that's what our conversation was about.
All right. Well, I'll let you guys get into it. I'm going to try and seek out an Olipop so I could actually taste what you guys are talking about. Because while I'm aware of it, I have not tried it. Apologies to Chad. But yeah, I'll let you guys get into it. Thanks, Kamika.
Bless. Hi, Chad, and welcome to the Digiday Podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Glad to have you. Glad to have you. You are head of marketing at Olipop. I know that you guys are a drink brand that has captured the attention of a lot of people. So tell me a little bit about Olipop, and then we'll get into my fun question that I ask all the time.
Okay, great. We like to say we're a new kind of soda. We've found a way to take the taste of traditional soda, but take out a lot of the bad stuff, right? So we've got significantly lower sugar, 2 to 5 grams of sugar in each can, 9 grams of fiber, and we've also added prebiotics. So you don't have to sacrifice the taste or any of your favorite flavors. I mean, we've got 16 different flavors, and they're all based on the flavors that we all grew up drinking and that exist today. So, I think it's a healthier alternative to traditional soda. And I think it you don't have to sacrifice the taste. So that's kind of us in a nutshell, I guess.
Okay. So I do this thing where I ask a fun question every episode. And now that we've kind of got the groundwork for what you guys are and that you're 16 flavors, I know for Dry January, you guys hopped in with the campaign or the activation rather around Dry January, mocktails and things like that. So I want you to give me a mocktail recipe given your flavors.
Oh my gosh. That's a tough one.
It is
a tough one. I don't actually drink a lot of mocktails. I use Dry January as a way to completely cut out alcohol. So I actually went away from the mocktails, and I will tell you that what I have done is substituted the cocktail, not necessarily with a mocktail, but with an Olipop. So the flavor of the one that I drink the most is ginger ale. But it still sort of like has that level of, romanticized, drink, like a cocktail, but it feels like, but I'm drinking something that's actually, you know, better for me. So, I don't actually drink a lot of mocktails. We do have, I think, 7 mocktails on our site though, this month that we've created, with a mixologist. I hope that's okay. I hope that question's okay.
Absolutely. And it actually leads to a follow-up.
Okay.
With the ginger ale one that you drink most often, what do you pair it with? What snack does it go with?
Oh my gosh. So, have this routine. So back when I was drinking, I would have like a charcuterie board. Cheese is mostly, like, cheese is sort of a bit of a weakness for me, and it still is. But I would say I would pair it with different types of cheeses, maybe Gouda. I still like sharp cheddar and brie. So in the afternoon, sort of happy hour time, like, you know, maybe when you're kind of relaxing and winding down, I would pair it with a cheese maybe. And yeah, I'm not a big fan of the meats, to be honest. I'm probably more of a cheese. I think it's probably, I have a massive sweet tooth. So that's probably why.
Oh, well, that makes two of us on this podcast.
that's my advice right now is sweets for sure. I need, that's my next thing. Maybe in 2025, I'll work on cutting that out.
I mean, honestly, with the way that the world is, who doesn't need a sweet treat every once in a while?
I know, right? Right? That's what I say.
Like I said, you guys have seen significant growth, even challenging some of the really big brands like your Pepsis and your Cokes of the world. So talk to me a little bit about the momentum behind that growth.
Yeah, I mean, it's so wild. I joined Olipop about this time last year, and we're such a different company today than we were 12 months ago, largely because of the growth. And it's really been crazy. I think some of the things that are sort of driving that is, I think right now we're living in a world where people are more aware of what they're consuming and what's in the products they consume. And so I think people are looking for healthier choices, from everything from soda to the foods they eat. And so I think we're in a world where we're offering a healthier alternative to something that people consume on a regular basis and have grown up consuming or used to consuming. So I think that's part of what's fueling it. You know, I think the other thing too is, from a marketing standpoint, well, I guess one thing I'd say to that before I move on to the marketing is, I think we've created this alternative, but like I said at the top, it's the taste is still consistent with what you're used to. One of the things that really I love seeing is consumer reaction when we go to tasting events. We'll have sampling events at events and the games or if we're sponsoring something. And it's so funny because, you know, we put the samples out and people, they read about it. And I think they have a preconceived notion when they see prebiotics, fiber, they're like, okay, this probably won't taste very good. The reaction on their face is almost always positive, and they're like, whoa, this is good. And then they'll take another sample and then they'll look like, where can I buy this? So it's actually like, it's a really positive feedback loop to watch people taste it, because the taste really is, it really is there. And I think that's a big reason why we've seen this momentum. You know, I think from a marketing perspective, we have seen huge success in social and in influencers. And I think we jumped on social, early on in the company's growth, I guess. And it was like rocket fuel almost. We jumped on the TikTok, about the time TikTok was kind of blowing up during the pandemic. And we saw a lot of growth there. And, we've been referred to as the TikTok soda, because we did see so much growth there. But, you know, influencers too, like influencers have been, a huge part of our marketing mix up until now. And I think it's a testament to just the massive growth with our communities and going out to try the product.
I know that one of the things that we mentioned before we started recording is you guys have a really strong in-house agency. There's always been this debate about in-house versus external partners. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, how you guys' in-house agency is set up and how you almost managed to, I guess, not be so insulated that you can't be innovative.
Yeah, it's such a great question. So I guess just to back up a bit, like, so I most of my career, I've been on the agency side. I've worked at three different agencies across the country. And so I sort of grew up understanding how agencies work. And one of the benefits of that is I was able to also work with a wide variety of brands and understand how brands work, right? So I kind of saw the best of both worlds. What I would see on the agency side, it is a lot of times when in-house agencies were set up, they would sort of like operate in a bit of a bubble, and they would operate in a way that like, mm-hmm. they would produce content that would go out that may not resonate with consumers in a way that maybe an agency, because they had more exposure to different types of culture or more diverse employees, they might catch. So I think it's an innovation piece, but it's also just making sure the content that we're making is relevant, and we're not essentially talking to ourselves. And so in building the team, when I started, I think there were about eight people on the team, and now we're about 25. And what have sort of done as we look to fill the key roles is look across the board. So it's, we've got people in from agency side, places like RGA, Wyden. But we've also got people that have worked on the brand side in-house teams too. So we're trying to get a mix of people, so we have different perspectives at the table. So we could kind of see, like, you know, it's funny because you hear someone that, there's really great perspectives from people that have worked in-house most of their career, but there's also really great perspectives coming from people that have worked on the agency side, because it is a little bit different and there are different worlds. So that's kind of how I try to do it. I think the other thing too is sometimes we do lean on external resources to make sure that we're getting outside of our box and we're maybe looking at something a little bit different. So, you know, I think I don't think there's ever going to be a world with this team, and we're continuing to grow, but I don't think there's ever going to be a world where it's just solely in-house and we're only doing things in-house. I think we're always going to want to like tap into resources outside just to make sure, just to check us really, just to make sure that we're not, you know, we're not talking to ourselves, or we're not irrelevant, or we're not, you know, saying something that could be misconceived. So.
Yeah. And then just kind of in the in-house argument, I think I haven't talked to a lot of people that are willing to bring media buying in-house.
Yeah. Yeah. So from a media perspective, we have a media lead, but we do work with an agency on that one, just because it's just more efficient to do that. That is a tough one to bring in house. And yeah, it's not something, there's some things you can build out and replicate inside of an organization. There's some things you can, and I think media is a good example of something it's a bit tough just given the way it's set up.
I know you mentioned TikTok and you guys is building momentum and success on there. So I would love to dig into that just a little bit more. I know you guys work through influencers. I feel like as the conversations that I have, that's the way that most brands go through it. But curious, you know, in addition to the influencers, have you guys tried like TikTok shops and their in-app ads, sponsors and things like this, some of their other offerings?
Yeah, we have actually. We've been experimenting with TikTok shop a bit. When it came out, we've been experimenting, playing around with it. You know, we've seen a few bugs. I will say that the TikTok team has been amazing in helping us out when we do encounter certain things. It's a new product, so I think you'd expect to see a few glitches. I'm not going to say that it's up and running in the way we'd want it to be running. I think there's still a little bit more work to do there, but it's definitely something we're experimenting with. You know, I think one of the things, you know, working at a company like Olipop that sort of created this functional space and you know, sort of finding new ways to innovate and do things is we're always looking for something new. Like what's the next thing we can try? And a lot of it's experimentation. I mean, that's how TikTok started, right? It was like, it was sort of like, let's experiment with this platform and see what we can do with it. And the team, I wasn't with Olipop at the time, but the team that did it, they just kind of went in and just like figured it out. And I think that's still how we approach a lot of things is, you know, these new technologies and innovations come up. How can we play with it? But yeah, I mean, TikTok, it still is a huge part of our mix. As far as, you know, paid, we do run paid on TikTok and as well as Instagram. So it is definitely, and you know, on TikTok, the shop and the paid, advertising are a bit linked. So, you know, we're testing out and seeing how that can work out. Still early days. We're still pretty much trying to learn from that. But I do think it's TikTok is an interesting platform. And I think it's something that we're going to continue to see evolve over the next few years. I mean, I'm curious to see where it goes.
Yeah, I know recently they had the back and forth about music with I think it was Warner Music.
Universal.
So I do wonder how, as you go forward. Yes, Universal Music Group. So I do wonder kind of how that's going to play out in terms of like, you know, what music you're allowed to use, what music that's trending, sounds and things like that, which is such a big part of TikTok.
I know. We have this conversation all the time internally because, you know, like as an individual or a creator, you can use it, but as brands get bigger, it's harder. You know, you can't really use some of the music. So we have these conversations all the time. And so it is a big part. It's been a huge part of our content. So yeah, it is interesting. I think, you know, it's not the first time this happened. I was reading an article the other day, and I think a similar thing played out with YouTube, or back in the day. I think it was in 2012, 2014. We'll see how it goes. I know it's down to negotiation, so it could come back, but yeah, it's a huge piece, but it's also part of how songs go viral too, right? Like, I mean, TikTok is a huge platform for viral songs, both new and old. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I think there is some room for experimentation. I talked to a couple of marketers who said that they've worked with their teams to actually create their own sounds and their own music just to kind of take that pressure off and go viral with some original content.
Yeah. We've talked about that. We've looked at potentially like, could we use sounds? Could we create that? We're looking at library, like maybe assembling a library. I think it is good. I mean, just based on on my experience, I think it's good not to be solely reliant on another platform mm-hmm. or something else. Like, you really need to figure out your own source so that you're less affected with these types of changes. Cause, you know, you go on TikTok now and a lot of the videos, a lot of the creator videos, a lot of just videos out there, it's like sounds not available. It's coming up on the videos they use it. So you don't want that. So yeah, the more we can rely less on these types of things and these types of decisions affect us less, I think that's the goal.
We'll be right back after this message from our sponsor.
I want to zoom out from TikTok and talk about what the rest of you guys' marketing strategy looks like. We've expanded our footprint. We're in more places in front of more people. I would imagine that also changes how you guys go to market. So talk to me a little bit about what the overall marketing strategy and media looks like for Olipop.
Yeah. So, you know, up until now, it's largely been social and influencers. And that was sort of the core piece. In 2023, when I joined, we started to experiment a little bit in brand. And in May of 2023, we launched our first brand platform, which is Real Love Makes Us, which is essentially the articulation of our mission. It's sort of the emotional connection we're trying to build with consumers. And it's sort of the premise is, you know, we really want to celebrate the moments in between the moments, because those are the ones that matter, right? Like, I mean, there's the big moments in your life, you know, your wedding and maybe the first job, that sort of thing. But it's the moments with your family and friends where you just, you know, and oftentimes you're sharing a soda. And it's just kind of talking about things. And the way we got to this was we did consumer research. And over and over, we started hearing consumers say that their memories of soda from their past was sharing a soda with their grandfather or their grandmother on the front porch, or their friends, like riding their bikes, right? Like till the sun went down and they had their sodas. And so, you know, it really sort of like unlocked something for us. So we started to realize like, it is really just the moments in between the moments that, you know, kind of just go by that people remember for the rest of their lives. I mean, I'm sure you have them. I have them, you know, like you think about that. And so, you know, I think that was sort of what drove the platform. So we experimented with that last year. We launched that. That ran from May to October. We featured Camila Cabello and her family. They were amazing to work with. It was such a, I say it over and over again, but it was such a great way for Real Love Makes Us to sort of land for us, because it was just, if you watch the spot, you see so many authentic moments with them. And what we did, the way we shot that was with a documentary style director, and we went in and just let them be. And we just went into their house and just said, you know, do what you would do. And so that's kind of like a typical, like maybe a typical night with their family. So it was really great. So that we tested that. We saw really great results with that campaign and from our brand tracker. And then we tested a few other things. We did we sort of amped up a flavor launch to see what that'd do with our ginger ale launch, and that was really fun. We saw a lot of great momentum with that, a lot of great response, and we actually sold out of ginger ale once that launched. So that was kind of fun to watch. That it was actually a little bit tough to find ginger ale in the weeks after we launched that flavor world. And then we ran out of home in Chicago last year, which for the first time in a big way. So that was for the month of October, we sort of played with that. So we took all of that with the learnings we had from social and influencer, and we've started to create a sort of marketing strategy moving forward. And I think what we'll see is we want to make sure there's a balance, because we still need to drive growth, right? We're still a young company. We need to continue to drive that growth, but we also want to start to deepen those connections, right, with our consumers. And so I think what the way we're looking at it now is, you know, sort of trying to create that balance between, you know, sort of above the line, higher level awareness type marketing, but also growth drivers, continuing with influencers, social media, performance marketing. And so I think, you know, it's funny with a company like ours, things change all the time. So we're constantly looking at the mix and is this still working? Probably a little more so maybe than maybe a more mature, older company that might sort of like set a marketing plan and just kind of follow it for the year. It's a little bit more, it changes a little bit more, but I think, you know, that's just the nature of where we are right now with our company is we've got to be able to react quick and make quick changes, which, luckily we can. So.
Yeah. I want to delve into, this is something that I've just been like purely curious about, but also personally curious about, is this idea of kind of like, as your brand grows, like kind of how does that, if it does at all, change the role of influencers? Like, do they also become like brand ambassadors? Do they take on more creative roles? You know, kind of how are they moving up and down the funnel with you guys?
Yeah, it's such a great question, because it's so, I mean, look, the influencer, it's sort of a little bit, I don't want to say the Wild West, but their influencer marketing is just sort of a new thing that everybody's trying to figure out how to work with them. And, you know, I've been delving deep into this and trying to figure out, like, you know, what their role is and how we use them moving forward. And I think, you know, first and foremost, I think the way we think about influencers is we want them to be customers first, right? Like we want, if someone's going to talk about our product, authenticity is so important to us that we really want to make sure that the people, when we work with influencers, we want to make sure that they actually believe in the product as much as we do. And so that's something that we've been doing more and more of. So I think, you know, from that perspective, when you talk about brand ambassadors, I mean, I think we could go in that space. I think right now we're just sort of like, continue to experiment to see what works. We have paid a lot of attention to our influencer strategy, over the last few months and trying to see where we can tighten it up and where we can, get a little stronger just based on our learnings over the last 2 years. But yeah, it's such a great question. And I don't have like a final answer for you right now, aside from the fact that I think the most important thing to us is authenticity and making sure that it feels authentic. Yeah. And ideally, you know, we can work with these influencers for a longer periods of time. It's not just a, hey, I'm going to pay you to post something. It's, we want to work with you for a long time. So in that respect, we're sort of bringing them into the fold a bit and into the Olipop family. And yeah, and we can continue to work with them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think something else that influencers have been a really big helping hand or asset when it comes to marketing is this idea of like filling content gaps, especially when you talk about TikTok. There's a kind of the feed the beast mentality that happens here. So talk to me a little bit about how you guys feed said beast. How are we filling up content to stay relevant there?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. The amount of content that influencers can produce is crazy. I mean, like you'd have to have a team so big to be able to do what we get from them. And the great thing about influencers, and the content they produce is they know their audience so well, even better than we would ever know them. So as far as the quality of the content, we typically see a high level of engagement with a lot of influencers we work with because they know their audience so well. They know what they're going to react to. The other piece is, the amount of content. I mean, thousands of pieces of content for us last year that we couldn't have done on our own, right? We there's no way. So I think it definitely for brands, I think it definitely offers up, you know, you're able to tap into specific communities, but you're also able to increase your content output in a time when there's so much content out there, like there's so much to absorb that it allows you to compete better, I think. So yeah, it's an interesting mix. And like I said, I think, you know, it's still early, you know, influencer marketing is still fairly young. So it's I'm gonna be curious to see where it goes. But I think so far it's been really effective.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about what content production looks like for you guys. I know the old Vanguard was kind of like taking a 15, 30 second spot, clipping it down for social, but there seems to be this wave where like we're starting with social and that kind of builds up to your 15, 30 second spot. So what does that look like for you guys?
Yeah. Yeah. So we actually, the way that we think about it is not necessarily let's create a bunch of matching luggage and take a spot and cut it down, put it online. I mean, I think that was sort of the old way of thinking about it. You know, when we talk about Real Love Makes Us, our brand platform, for example, you know, we think about when we look at the briefs, we're like, how do we activate that on TikTok? It doesn't necessarily mean we're going to throw the TV spot. How do we activate that in the most relevant and effective way? You know, same thing with like the website, right? Like how do we activate that on the website in a way that makes sense? And so we really want to make sure, and it goes back to the authenticity piece. How do we show up in the most authentic way and the most effective way, not just slap a bunch of videos across the internet? If it makes sense to put a cut down, we will. But it's not necessarily our approach. Maybe I think the other part of your question is sort of how we, how I guess what we see on social affects what we produce sort of above the line. I don't know. I mean, I think we would take learnings, from what we see in social and maybe some of the trends. And we may try to incorporate that. I think it's a bit of like looking at the big picture to see what's relevant. You know, there might be, I don't know, a scenario, a script that maybe we want to produce, and it allows us to unlock a specific community online. So that might be something that we consider, like, how would this show up if we did it this way? Or if we created this specific concept, could we activate this group online in a way that feels deeper, I guess, and could create more engagement. So we definitely don't look at the above line, any TV that we may create as a sort of like in a vacuum by itself. We look at it like how everything can connect across channel and our communities.
We mentioned earlier that you guys have moved into, you've expanded your footprint. We've now got an in-store retail present, Target, Kroger, things like this. So I think notably food and beverage categories are crowded. They take up most of the grocery store. So talk to me a little bit about the strategy to stand out in that crowded space with some really big competitors.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, even though we're sort of a startup, historically, we've been in store from the beginning. And actually, DVC makes up a very small portion of our business. So we've sort of been in store since sort of the beginning. And most of our sales come from in store. So we've gathered a lot of learnings. It is something that we, you know, we're currently in the refrigerated section, right? So that's where you'll find us. And so we do look for ways, and it's something we're actively looking at now, is how do we create more impactful displays? But what we want to do is, as we start to create sort of one unified brand, how do we pull through a unified brand design system all the way through to retail? And it's there's obviously a lot of benefits around that. When you think about the out of home and refreshment that we ran last year, and that look and feel, how does that come all the way down to in store, and how does that stand out? It's something that we're working on. It's something that it's extremely important. To your point, it is a very crowded space in retail. A lot of our discovery happens in retail, so we need to make sure that we're continually being front and center. We've got an amazing sales team that works with all the retailers. They go out and look for secondary placements and ways to stand out in different ways. And I think you'll see this year there's actually going to be some more ways that we'll roll out that we're going to be testing to see how it works. But it's ongoing, and it's something that as we've grown is becoming more and more important.
Yeah, for me personally, that sampling is where I get got every single time.
You know, it's funny because sampling is something I think we also are looking at doing more of, just because it's so effective. I mean, with the taste, it's so effective, and I feel like we're sort of fortunate in that way that consumers do respond so positively to the taste that sampling is really effective with us. And I know people love the sampling offerings in store. So
there's an entire cult of people behind sampling.
Oh yeah. So, yeah. Oh yeah. Talk about communities you could tap into, right? Like,
Yeah, exactly. On the topic of communities, same question, but kind of from a different angle, is kind of like Gen Z has been diagnosed, described kind of as like this, not necessarily brand agnostic, but not particularly brand loyal either. But you guys have kind of made a mark on them. So talk a little bit about how you build brand love, brand affinity with that generation.
Yeah. You know, I think Gen Z at the core is about authenticity. And I think they appreciate and recognize brands that are authentic. And I think that's why we've had such success with them, is we're just, if you see our TikToks, and the team that creates those is just so talented, and they really get that platform and those audiences. We really just show up in an authentic, real way. You know what I mean? Like, we don't go on there, we don't try and sell things. We just have fun. And I think that's why we've been so successful with Gen Z, because we're just ourselves. And I don't want to ever lose that. Even when we start to talk to a more mass audience, I think we need to be our true selves. And I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that's it. I think it's number one, a killer team that really gets the platform and really understands what works and what doesn't, and just being authentic.
Yeah, it's the idea of participating in community as opposed to the, what is it, hey, fellow kids moment?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of brands that go on. I've worked in my agency time, we would try and launch things on TikTok, and brands, bigger brands, were like, we don't know what to do. So they go on and do this like big stunt or something. And, it might get some, you'd pay to get the views or whatever, but you wouldn't really, like, nothing happened after that. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, you just kind of lose the people, because it wasn't authentic. It was just sort of like, you just paid for it and moved on. So, yeah,
exactly. Obviously, I can't let this conversation go by without asking about Google's crumbling third-party cookies. Curious kind of how that impacts you guys, and where we're finding it's the cookie crumbling has given way to retail media networks and other things to kind of pop up and fill those spaces. So two-pronged question, how are you guys managing, and have other things kind of pulled through to give the information that you guys need?
Yeah. No, it's definitely something we're looking at. But we look at a variety of different sources when we're looking at data from online. I think one of the areas that we've started to look at is retail data. With I'm sure you've seen, but you know, you're starting to see the sort of like the splintering of search, and you're starting to see a lot of people go straight to the retailers to search, right? Like the Walmarts, the Amazons of the world, even TikTok. I mean, we don't see the data, right? But we know that TikTok is becoming a huge search engine for Gen Z. So we're able to leverage some of that data to make up for some of the data we're losing from that, from Google. But I think it's, the thing is, like, that data is really powerful. Actually, the retail data is really powerful, especially for someone like us. So it actually, we haven't really noticed much of a difference, to be honest, because we're able to like find other sources of information. But yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. I do think it will be interesting. I said it earlier, but it will be interesting to see how TikTok evolves, because one of the things that I've seen, and I'm sure you have too, is, you know, specifically with Gen Zs, there's less of a trust on sites like Google because of the search results, and they're going to platforms they trust like TikTok to find things. So, you know, TikTok doesn't reveal a ton of data, but, you know, over time, I'm curious to see as they look to maybe release that, they might monetize it. But we could get a lot of information there. So I think it's probably just like everything else, where like one thing sort of disappears and another thing comes in to sort of fill the void, I guess. So yeah, that's kind of how we've sort of done it or approached it.
I think the way that I've been describing it is kind of like when it first was announced, everybody was like, oh my God, the sky is falling. What are we going to do? And as time has played out, the more marketers that I've talked to, it's just been like, maybe the sky's not falling after all. We have alternatives work. Okay.
Yeah. I feel like there's always something that comes and fills when there's a big announcement like that and people are like, oh no, the world's changing. There's always something that comes in and fills that void. And you're like, oh wait, okay, this is here. This is fine. So yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, this is fine.
Yeah.
The last question that I have for you is, you know, obviously I think one of the main themes of a conversation that you guys are growing a lot. And kind of with that growth, I'm curious what kind of comes next, what media investment, what messaging, what that type of thing.
Yeah. So I think we want to continue to focus on building a more loyal customer base. We really want to deepen the connection with our consumers. So it's not necessarily a transactional relationship, but more of an emotional relationship. And it's something that, people just think about us every time they go to the store. The other thing I think we think about, you know, as the, you know, we created the functional soda category, the first to market there. So we're now thinking about how do we be, you know, sort of how do we go beyond that? And we're a mass brand, right? Like we're, you know, I think it's something like 10% of our customer base has switched from traditional soda and now drinks Olipop.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, you kind of see where it's going. And I think that's sort of what we're thinking about now, is how we continue to show up as a mass brand. So I think, you know, we'll continue to those two things. We talked a lot about influencer and social, and, you know, we're definitely, that's a huge part of the mix. We are also looking at, for 2025, we'll have a big partnership that we'll be announcing soon, that we're starting to go in that space, and, as a way to sort of, you know, connect with communities and unlock new audiences. So that's a new space for us that we'll start to play in as well, which is exciting. I'm excited for that to come out. So, you know, I think we'll take what's working over the last few years and the foundation we build, and we'll start to build on top of it with, you know, carving out a place to tell our brand story and why you know, we're different. But then also really start to build trust and connection with those consumers.
Absolutely. Listen, cannot thank you enough for spending some time and stopping by the podcast, and hope to see you here again soon.
Thank you. It was so much fun.
That brings us to the end of this episode of the DigiDay podcast. Thank you to everyone for listening. And please don't forget to share this episode with someone who you think would enjoy it. You can even rate us and leave a comment on Apple Podcasts.